7. It is Tuesday, August 18th.
Please turn your mics on.
Is it getting up for me?
I don't know. Are we here?
Yeah, we'll hear yours.
I mean, it's going to record, but...
Just make sure you push the button on your mic, and it's got a green light.
Okay, so it's Tuesday, August 18th, at 7:02 p.m. We are meeting this here at the Community Center. We will start this meeting with a pledge given by Councilmember Geddes, and a dedication by Councilmember Ellsworth.
All right, let's rise. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Our Heavenly Father, we're grateful for the opportunity to meet as a city council and city leaders. We're grateful for the opportunity to represent the people that live in our city. Please bless the Lord out of insight and forethought necessary to make the decisions we made today. And at this time, we ask a blessing on our city and our residents. They will be safe and careful given the pandemic and other things that are going on. We pray that you see the best that is present.
Item number two, I just need an approval of meeting agenda.
So she can be in the call.
I'll move to approve the meeting agenda.
A motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth. Is there a second? Second by Councilmember Smith. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passed unanimously. Move on to item number three, which is the public comment portion of our meeting. Is there anybody here that would like to comment on the public comment? Seeing none, we're going to close that portion of our meeting and move on to the consent agenda, which is the approval of the minutes from the July 7th, 2024 session of the council meeting. So I would like to make that motion.
I will make the motion that we approve the consent agenda.
Motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth. Is there a second? Second by Councilmember Geddes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Moving on to item 5 and 6, city reports of business, starting with Mr. Geddes.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. We're excited about the continued success and interest in the golf course. We're continuing to see great numbers here at the course, and we're excited for what staff has done this year to build a course that people keep coming back to, so we want to recognize them. Also, our rec programs, as I've mentioned in the past, have returned with soccer and flag football signups going on right now. We are instituting COVID-19 measures that will be taking place to promote a safe and clean environment for the kids to participate in. And then as we've had fires around us, we want to reiterate to the residents that they need to be aware of the dangers that the fires pose in our area, and that they need to follow those safe guidelines when starting a fire, and this includes understanding where there are restricted areas for fires. And if there are any questions, we'd encourage them to reach out to the fire department. And then finally, there have been a number of incidents of vandalism at Harvey Park. We are looking at a security system down there to install. But if residents down there see any activity that is dangerous or illegal or suspicious, we encourage them to contact the police. That's all.
Thank you. The only item I have is in our August MAG meeting, the item that we had submitted to the TAC committee, Mr. MAG, for funding has been approved, and that is an extension. It's in conjunction with Pleasant Grove City, but it is extending Harvey Boulevard White and from the White Day at Harvey Park all the way up to County Road. So that funding is for the 2024 funding cycle, but it was in there was sort of three items. Councilmember Smith?
I don't have anything to say.
Councilmember Ellsworth? Councilmember Geddes?
Nothing to report.
All right. Move on to our scheduled items, starting with item 7, which is review action and public hearing on ordinance amending the city code title 10, chapters 4 and 6 related to driveways. Starting with the public hearing, is there anybody here who wants to speak to this item? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing. For the 10 orders, Mr. Geddes.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. As we mentioned last time, this item was on the council agenda last month, and we tabled it so that we could get it noticed properly. But what this is a staff working in conjunction with American Fork Fire and the Fire Marshal in order to promote driveways that are accessible to public safety, when even though that the slope of the driveway may be beyond what our city standards allow. Our city standards allow for slopes to be up to 12%, and there's a few spots in the city where development requires
fairly steep driveways. We recognize that. What this code would do would allow the city engineer and the city building official to work on acquiring code compliant stairs and railings when a driveway exceeds the city standard. This allows for a mechanism for public safety to access a home should there be an incident. This is per our discussion last month. This is not retroactive. This is only going forward for homes that are going to be built, not reconstructions. I believe any reconstruction would be approved to rebuild their previous driveway. But like I said, this item was for the council last month. Are there any questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
So, I mean, this is a little bit personal, but I have a lot that has a really long driveway, and unfortunately, it may exceed 12%. How would that play?
During the only the portions of 12% that we need to drive the steps.
Yeah, but that might just kind of just one that winds up the hill. There may be portions of it that, I mean, I don't know exactly how it's going to be, but it would be silly to have driveways. I mean, it's a rural driveway, essentially, not a driveway to a house, you know what I'm saying?
Right, and this brings us back to the exact question of, do you want public safety to get access to the property? And if they can't access it, then, I mean, there are already a limitation. I've concluded what lots of you are speaking of, but if there are already a limitation in getting a fire truck up there, or a brush truck, or any truck up there to fight a fire, and they're limited in their ability to get personnel up there, it seems like we're compounding a problem rather than resolving.
Well, I don't know that putting a handrail and steps in areas that were, like, assume that thing switchbacks.
But the whole thing's not going to be 12%. It's going to be in pieces, right?
It might be, I don't know. But it seems silly in the middle of a 800-foot driveway to have some stairs and a handrail. That just doesn't make any sense.
Is it just coming from
fire marshal? This is coming from fire marshal, yes.
I mean, you're not, why would you get out of your truck and walk that area when you would drive it? That's my point.
Well, that's the thing, is in inclement weather, they may not be able to drive it, it's too steep.
Which for fire,
in that case, why would you go over stairs when you have a 15% ramp that you could walk up 15% drive, 15% drive by yourself? I'm not saying it is, I'm just saying it could.
I guess then I'm not understanding the concern, because the stairs are there to give public safety access during that time. The whole point of the driveway is that if it's over 12% and it's iced over, it does become very difficult for public safety.
Well, I think there are these
to carry people out of the home if they're on a stretcher.
No, I'm not talking about getting out of the home. I'm talking about getting up the 800 feet of driveway.
Right, if they can't get their vehicle up a slope, then they have to carry them down the driveway.
So it's a bigger issue.
And why would they then choose to go downstairs when they had a driveway road that's got maybe a little steeper than 12%. No, that's all I'm saying. Like, I mean, they would never do that. So to have stairs along a little portion of the driveway and stairs along, that doesn't make any sense.
Then I guess,
Chandler.
Sorry.
Can I make a comment?
Please do.
I think during the plan review process that when it goes through the fire, because of the distance, it would not be permitted to have steeper driveway. Pardon me. Steeper driveway than the 12%. Most of the time, fire would be 8% with specific radiuses, so apparatuses could get into that area. So I don't think it's a problem, because fire wouldn't permit the driveway to be steeper anyway.
Right. In this case, is the driveway asphalt, or at least what's the driveway made of?
Could probably be asphalt or crush rock. I mean, probably asphalt, actually. Probably. Could be.
Well, if that's the case, and you're okay with the driveway that is 800 feet over 12%, then this whole, I'm just going to be frank, this whole code is moving. There's no point in even passing it. If you're okay with the driveway at 800 feet in length violating the code, then I don't know why you would be okay.
No, I'm just saying there might be small portions of it that, I don't know. I mean, I would hope not.
Well, that's why I'd say maybe no section. You need to have some mechanism for that to comply with.
But, I mean, okay. I understand where you're coming from. I'm just saying it's
There needs to be a little flexibility in this.
Well, and that's why it's only those sections that are over 12%, so, you know, we talked about a driveway, what happens when the driveway slopes, which is a small section that needs steps, well, that small section needs steps, and it leaves the rest of the driveway as access points, but,
Now, my point, John, I think you're missing it, is that assume that, say, in the middle of that driveway, there was a little area that was over 12%. Just assume that somehow that just is how it worked out because of the grade or whatever, it just wouldn't work unless it was moving over. You would never get out of a vehicle.
No, in the middle of the driveway. In this case, I think the assumption is that they're not in a vehicle, is that they're walking there on foot.
And I'm saying if they're walking, they'd much rather take a 15% ramp than go upstairs. I'm just saying.
Well, they also, to counter that though, the stairs would be very indicative that the slope may be dangerous. Whereas if there's no steps, then there's nothing to indicate that during a snowstorm.
Well, for one example of this, I double checked, and Suncrest portion of Draper allows drivers to 15%. So,
yeah.
So fire and safety can easily handle 15%. So why are we limiting it to 12%?
Well, I think 12% was the grid that has always been in our code, if I'm not mistaken. So they're looking at when the fire marshal was working with us on the code, it wasn't a matter of changing the grade, it was changing the issue lines. So, if the council wants to make that steeper, I mean, you've got to realize that there are consequences to that.
Well, I understand on a short distance. I'm just thinking because I personally have a lot that's going to have a very long drive. Someone is, I'm going to live there, but someone's going to have a very long drive to their house.
Define a short distance.
Like maybe through a switchback or something. I don't know how that road's going to actually end up ultimately one of that hill. So.
Because to Jeff's point, there could be other issues there with the radius not being too tight for an apparatus to be being able to go through it anyway. So in that case, they could definitely be able to. So I think those are some things to consider.
I just think that needs to be a little bit of leeway.
How do you create leeway without creating loopholes?
I would call it on a rural lot or something like that, saying something different. I mean, I understand on a regular subdivision, I have no question that this is not a regular subdivision.
I think ultimately our goal here is to just make sure that regardless of weather circumstances, deep circumstances, that public safety can get to the door. And so my concern with making exceptions is we're basically then acknowledging there may be types of public safety cannot get to your house and we're okay with that. I don't think we are. And so it may require a little bit more for a home that is going to be developed like that, but with the understanding that we're just trying to make it a situation where our fire and EMS can get in there for what.
Well, I think a little bit of exception to the fact that we're not okay that it is. I would say in a true emergency, our fire department will go up anything.
Look, I have a quick question. I've seen homes that have, that share like a private drive, which is the, you know, asphalt road that somebody maintains, but it's not a driveway, it's called a private drive. There might be two or three homes with driveways that will offer that private drive. Would this fall into that category, and does that category of a private drive have different requirements than a driveway?
Well, the private drive, even though it's a private drive that's shared between lots, it's still under one person's name. So ultimately, during the approval process, it's being approved at some point.
Yeah, is it being approved as a road or a driveway?
In this case, it's a private driveway that has a shared access recorded against it for the second.
Right, because two people share it.
But then there's also, I don't know of any shared driveways that feed off more than two homes. Are you familiar with any, Jeff? I'm not talking about private roads.
Not that I can think of.
I can't.
We don't really have many flag lots that I'm aware of.
We don't have too many flag lots. We do have some cul-de-sacs that are private, meaning the city doesn't own the street. But then there's still a driveway off cul-de-sac, but that cul-de-sac, that road is in one of the homeowners' names, and that would not apply to this typical street development standards would apply in that case.
Right, so what I'm trying to figure out is that the loophole? Is this driveway to a certain point going to be considered a road as opposed to a driveway? And then, let's say they switch to a concrete driveway after their garage. Is that the loophole of this?
Yeah, well, you're describing it exactly.
I want to give an example of something that did happen in our city with a similar situation up in your area, which is, it's a home that's quite a bit off the main road, and it has a driveway that goes up there. Fire department said they could not get up there, so they required that home to install its own fire suppression system, which is fine, that goes with fires. But they had an incident with a child there who became injured, and EMS could not get up their driveway, so that homeowner was responsible to bring the child down their driveway to the main road in order to transport them to the hospital. And I think those are the situations we're trying to avoid.
Right. I think that's great. Is that a problem for the family to bring the child down, right?
Well, in that case, because the child wasn't, I mean, they could bring the child down, but I think there's probably going to be some instances with the true emergency where that's not possible. Maybe the person is unresponsive, or they're too heavy to bring down. I don't know. We're just trying to resolve a situation that we already know exists in our city. We can't resolve it for the people who are built a home, but now that we know it exists, I need to make sure that that's not an issue going forward.
Where does the 12% number come from? Is that just our code? Is that coming from the fire marshal?
That's coming from our marshal.
Okay, so it's not like some state.
Not that I'm aware of. Jeff won't know more about that than I do. Do you know anything? Is there anything?
Yeah, my understanding is that it did come from the fire apparatuses, the emergency response vehicles, is what they're recommending. It's similar to school buses. So our code says that the development road can have an 8% slope. It can go 12% for 300 feet. And it can't be a long 12%. That would be a violation of our code. And that's where these numbers have come from, is the response vehicle capabilities. To Mike's credit, I mean, they do have apparatuses, and that's my understanding that in some instances, jurisdictions have approved longer, steeper driveway with the understanding that they do have the equipment to respond to that situation. So if the fire department was to approve it on condition that, you know, they do have vehicles that can traverse that, then that would be their call. I mean, it is a fire safety code, so I don't want to put words into their mouth what would or wouldn't be approved. But that's kind of where the history of that sort of came from.
So that's the catch then that we're working against, is that this is a rating for the vehicles. The limitation is they can't get up there, it's over 12%. So homeowners would have to bring whoever's injured down, which could be a child, which could be a full-grown adult. And we're trying to decide whether the city is going to put a code in place to prevent a situation where a homeowner has to bring somebody down or something, or not do anything, but just comply with the road. These situations where it'd be difficult to get somebody to help pick
it
up.
It does, and that also relates to this portion of the code change relates to the building code, in that ramps are typically no more than 12% slope. And for an ADA ramp, then we're just over 8%, but for a typical normal ramp, you can go up to 12%. So that kind of ties in with the walking capabilities of the surface itself also. That's where it comes in, where the language is that they would provide a ramp or stairway, a code compliant ramp or stairway, which that means they utilize the driveway as a ramp if it's 12% or less. Both portions that are not, then they would put in a code compliant stair.
Or if you can create a code compliant alternate pathway of the walkway.
Right, that works.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. All right. We're good done.
Additional questions from the council or comments from staff?
To your point that you just made, that's my real work. The last sentence of the proposed code says building commission on the issue until progressive grade or modifications are constructed, so I think that's the problem, the plane that could be a ramp, could be steps, could be any sort of mechanism that applies with that slope requirement to get a person's plane complete. So I've said steps, I've said rail, but it's really, you know, there's some leeway there. So I don't know if that helps at all, council members, yes, but I think that's kind of what you're, yes.
Yeah, I understand. I think it's, I don't like it personally.
Alright.
My point on that is, if our fire and police and everything are capable of climbing a freaking mountain to get people down, so.
It's true, I agree, and there's situations that are put in where they're going to go in no matter what, and I recognize that. But it's like, here's kind of one of my final thoughts on this, is that if there's not a ceiling on the amount of percent that could be put into a driveway, we run into a situation where we ran into earlier this year where the driveway slope is up to 30% in areas. And at that point, that's definitely not a safe driveway, that's way beyond 12, you know?
Yeah.
So I
know 12's been in there, I think it'd be nice to see the leeway up there, because that's acceptable in the outside communities. I mean, Suncrest is a perfect example, I mean, it's a hillside, so they allow it to be.
I mean, that's something that staff can investigate in terms of what, obviously this code was written when we were with multiple people, 12%, so I don't know, we would have to give a American report and say, talk to us about this percentage rate.
Has anyone ever asked our police, our chief? I am curious.
No, they reviewed this, and they gave us the thoughts, and they didn't fall into the 12%. Granted, I don't know why they wanted to go steeper, but.
Right.
So, I totally agree. The question of what are your capabilities and can this go steeper was not brought up.
Yeah, all we have as far as land in our city is the hillside, that's all this land.
No, and that's why this is still an issue, I think it needs to be addressed.
Can we take it back and see if they've got a different idea or a different limit for the percentage, and maybe take this up next time?
Yeah, no problem.
So are you making a motion to table this, Councilor Mensah?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to table this item so that we can get feedback on an acceptable upper limit for the percent grade.
Motion made by Councilor Ellsworth, is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilor McGinnis. Mr. Goodwin, I'm assuming that if that is the case, it needs to go back to Planning Commission, since it's Title 10.
I don't think so.
American Corps said that we could change the steepness of our driveways.
I'll look into that, yeah. Well, here's some thoughts, I know.
Okay.
We'll check into that.
Okay, so I have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Moving to item number 8 is a review action on ordinance amending City Code Title 1, Chapter 88, related to records access management and retention scheduling.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. As you may or may not know, the city does have its own retention schedule. Back in 2015, the city adopted its own retention schedule to get off of the state's retention schedule. Part of this was due to the fact that the state continually changed the records retention requirements, making some of them somewhat difficult to comply with. So we created our own retention schedule. And this is actually the first time in 5 years that we've modified, so we feel like we did a pretty good job. But what we want to do is we want to add three different types of records that would be found in our retention schedule. These are additions, not modifications. So the first one is project management records. We have a lot of projects that, as a city, that we do ourselves. We have projects that residents do, like Eagle projects. And this simply just creates a file that, or a system that, how those records are kept. Second one is surveillance reporting. In our conversations with the staff about the need to monitor certain parks for vandalism, we do want to have the ability to record what's going on in those parks, but that also creates a record. So the record in this case would be retained until resolution of the issue and then destroyed, but any record would just say these records consist of surveillance used to report activity on government property. In an instance requiring further evaluation are not included. So if the DVR is set for 5 days, 10 days, whatever, that's how long the record is kept. It's pulled off, then it's kept until the resolution of the incident. And then finally, on the drama, these are the records that are requested of the government for Government Records Access Management Act. We retain these for 2 years for after the final action and then destroy the records. These are just the requests. Colleen, can we differentiate between the requests and the actual fulfillment?
No, that would include the fulfillment.
Okay.
The other part of the Grumman that's already in there is any appeals, and appeals that go to the State Records Committee, those have to be kept permanently, but that's already on our schedule that we passed in 2016.
So we will be adding 3 different records to our retention schedule.
So on the surveillance recordings, it's okay that it's not a specific time frame, just a resolution of issue, you don't have to be specific?
This language actually comes straight from the state.
Oh. Questions from the council?
I believe all the records here, the retentions come from the state, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're merely mirroring what the state requires in these instances. We're not listening to what we're planning on.
Great. There are no questions from the council, I'll take a motion.
I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve ordinance number 8-18-2020A, ordinance amending Title I, Chapter 8A3 of the City Code of the City of Cedar Hills related to the Cedar Hills City Record Retention Schedule.
Motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth, is there a second? Seconded by Councilmember Smith. Councilmember Geddes?
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth?
Aye.
Councilmember Smith? Motion passes unanimously. On to item number 9, which is a discussion and an update on COVID-19 related expenses and CARES Act reimbursement and expenditures.
So as you know, the city did receive a bit of money from the distribution of the CARES Act fund. The city received just under $719,000, and we wanted to report to you what we are intending to use that money for and how it's being used currently. Right now, the city must report to Utah County on use of those funds, and any unused funds, I believe as of November 2nd, get returned to the county for distribution or returned back to the treasury if not used ultimately. And as I'm looking at the way that we've planned some of our expenditures, I think they can kind of fall under 3 broad categories. One is personnel expenditures, 2 is sanitation expenditures, and 3 would be social distancing measures. We're expending money for. On the personnel side, the CARES Act and Treasury guidelines do state that when an individual's time is spent substantially dealing with the COVID crisis, that their salaries, benefits, wages to be paid out of the CARES Act fund. Also, the city may presume that, based on the Treasury language, the city may presume that public safety costs are substantially dedicated to the response to the coronavirus. So with that, I know that internally on staff we've been discussing how best to grapple with this because there is a lot of different direction that the city's receiving, whether it's from the Treasury, whether it's from the state, whether it's from other cities, county, or auditors. We're going back to what the Treasury is saying in terms of how they've described the use of this money. We're really trying to adhere to those guidelines, not too much to the interpretations that we're receiving from other groups. So, that's kind of what
I get, everybody. It's 5 o'clock in New York, about 24 hours after Michelle Obama.
But so we have a few staff members that have dedicated a substantial amount of time to dealing with the coronavirus, and so we'll be calculating those hours from March to probably the end of the year, and shifting those funds over to this CARES Act fund. Also, we work with AmeriCorps on paying out a hazard pay bonus to our public safety personnel, both fire and police, for time worked during March to June. They received a bonus in order to deal with all the responses that they've had, all the changes in responses that they've had to deal with. On sanitation measures, we are cleaning each building multiple times a day by wiping down frequently used surfaces. We're providing masks to people enter into buildings. We're ordering masks for staff and other types of PPE. And also, we're looking at touchless features throughout all of our buildings, whether it's lights, sinks, toilets, dryers, whatever you name it, we're looking at. So there's a substantial portion of money that's being used for that purpose. And then finally, on the social distancing measures, we are implementing measures where we're allowing people to work from home should their job allow it, whether it can be recognized that it can be effective and as they work from home. So that includes the purchase of laptops, other equipment that allows them to work from home in a useful manner. We purchased some initial laptops that were kind of a low grade, and we're finding that those are not adequate. We're also looking at trying to fulfill more records and interact with the public in a more digital manner. This allows for the digital submission of building plans and visual review of building plans so that there's not physical items changing hands. And then we are doing some parking golf improvements to promote social distancing golf. They are offering golfers the option of taking a cart alone if they're with a group so that they're not forced to be in a cart with somebody that could, but they're not necessarily exposed to on a day-to-day basis. And in the park, we're adding more tables, shade structures, so that we're trying to spread some more people out more that. And then you have these fancy mics that are for you today. So we're looking at all sorts of ways that we can allow people to spread out. That's kind of a brief rundown. Up to date, we've spent $38,000. So we've barely made a dent. But I believe that the rest is encumbered in some way, whether it's for public safety, whether it's for these items that we've talked about today. Many of them take a little bit of time in terms of getting the necessary bids and then going out to contract or going out to contract for their bids and then actually implementing the changes. So it's taking a little bit of staff time. But are there any direction or any, is there any direction or is there any questions that I can answer with you to use with your checkpoint?
I had read something this week from the state level that they're going to start allowing employees to essentially, they're eliminating employee positions needing to be in a building. Having certain roles, they can always be work from home. Mm-hmm. Are we looking at the same thing, or is this just temporary work from home for now?
That's a very good question. And as we've talked about, there are a few positions that we are looking at the possibility of changing some of our personnel policy procedures that would allow for some positions to be able to work from home. We found that some employees, and this is just given what they're able to do from home. So are they able to access the server? Are they able to take calls and answer emails? That's really the nature of it. There are some things that you just basically have to be in the building to do. And a lot of that is just transactional, where it's money changing hands or building plans. So if you change some of these items, like building plans, if those can be submitted digitally, well, then there's the option of does our building official have the ability to review plans at home? So we're looking at some of those options in terms of what we can do to facilitate that. In terms of implementing that long term, yeah, I think that there are some positions that in the long term there could be some work from home. But like I said, the one position I can think of right now that is most likely work from home and has been working from home the most, I would say 80% of their job can be done from home. There's a 20% aspect that has to be done. Some of that is every day. So there still needs to be a physical presence in the building. And so that's, most of that has to do, like I said, reconciling money and being able to check off the box for the place where it's.
I would just add, as far as the CARES Act funding goes, the treasury updates are every week, every 3 to 4 weeks, and we've seen that they are continually becoming less restrictive with how funds can be used, and right now there's the expectation that it's likely that there will be an extension on the deadline that has to be spent. So the funds are being agreed that if the county receives an extension, they will also get that same extension to cities. So all right, I will move on to item number 10, which is discussion on short-term rental properties.
And I'm sorry, I just wanted to make a motion that maybe we table this one just without Councilmember Anderson and Miller, because I'm thinking you just have to catch them up.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's okay with you.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Okay, and I'm just thinking then you have to tell them everything we already said, because it's not an action item.
That's very good.
Thanks,
okay. Okay, I have a motion to table by Councilmember Smith. Is there a second?
Second
by Councilmember Ellsworth. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously, so I will take a motion to adjourn.
I'll
I'll motion for adjournment. Motion made by Councilor Smith, is there a second?
Okay.
Second by Councilor Gittens, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we are adjourned. Thank you.